Welcome to Nerds on the Rock, episode 10. I am your host this week, Rick Earl, as Michael is, I'm assuming he's still in rehab, who knows. And joining me this week for a very special discussion is Jordan, who is the artist and writer for Mere Mortals, a webcomic. Say hello.
Hey. Hello.
And joining us for the second time is Adam, who is the co-host of Gamers Cast podcast and a contributing editor to PS3node.com.
Hey, great to be here.
Okay, so this week our discussion will be on cult. I guess it can't be a cult hit yet, but it's not a hit. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and I guess the whole Scott Pilgrim franchises, which includes 6 graphic novels, and I guess if anybody has it, the PSN, Xbox Live Arcade video game. And our question of the week will deal with video game storylines. But let's get to Scott Pilgrim now. Has anybody seen the movie?
I saw it.
Go ahead.
Have you seen it all you want?
I've seen it twice.
Okay, I was about to say, because you saw Inception twice too, didn't you?
Yeah, I've seen all the summer movies twice. I saw Toy Story 3 3 times. I saw Inception twice, and I saw Scott Pilgrim twice.
I mean, ask why.
Somebody has money.
For Scott Pilgrim, I took a friend who wanted to see it because I wanted him to see it too. And then, yeah, pretty much it was just because the other friends wanted to go. The only reason I saw Inception twice was because I didn't understand it the first time.
Huh. Interesting. So what did you think of the movie the 2 times you saw it?
I liked it better the first time I saw it. There was just very good vibes in the theater. The second time I saw it, not really. Like, the first time I came in, I was super excited, you know. I read all the comic books, I'm so excited for the movie. Second time, I just kind of took it as, you know, walking into a movie, let's experience this as if I never saw the comic books. And I definitely liked it better knowing, you know, a lot about the characters rather than taking it, like, as a movie.
Fair enough. That actually reminds me, I've seen it once, and I saw it during a pre-screening event, and an audience really does make a movie because it was a pre-screening event. Like, everybody there was like huge Scott Pilgrim fans, and they were really into the movie. Like, sometimes that works for a movie, and sometimes it works against the movie, because you also kind of get those people who laugh and heckle at stuff where you end up missing parts of the movie because the audience isn't calming down. I mean, it really gets you into the movie, and you realize, like, this part's supposed to be funny or this part's supposed to be sad or happy. But on the same hand, it can be distracting if it's your first time and you're trying to, you know, get everything that's coming at you.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the first time I saw it, there was just laughter throughout the first 40 minutes of the movie. And just nonstop laughter, everyone's laughing. Second time I saw it, maybe a few chuckles here and there, nothing really crazy. So yeah, I'd agree with you. The audience really does make a difference when seeing this.
So you had an audience of, like, hardcore fans and an audience of just casual people, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, I would assume at this point, the only audience it had would be hardcore people. It's second weekend this weekend, I guess, and it's the number 10 movie in America.
Oh, gosh. I think Cats and Dogs opened better than this.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Vampires Suck has more than half of its gross in 5 days than it has in 2 weeks, which is really sad. I expected this movie to do well. I don't know why. I mean, you would think it was opening up against The Expendables, which I think is the other big summer movie because it had its niche. It had that huge, you know, it had that, it's a guy movie. Big, bro-y guys throwing up stuff and cheesy one-liners. Mm-hmm. But R-rated movies usually don't do that well, so I assume Scott Pilgrim would have had that advantage, being that it wasn't R-rated. But apparently nobody went to see it. Like I said on Twitter, I think the only positive that comes out of that is the fact that it should be out on DVD and Blu-ray before Christmas.
Well, probably the biggest reason it failed, besides half the audience of Scott Pilgrim is an audience for The Expendables. That's bad opening, just picking that movie. And anybody else would go see Eat Pray Love, so had 2 very strong movies opening against it. And the free screenings, that had to hurt it.
Yeah, I understand.
Well, they've been free screening since, like, February?
Have they? Well, I guess that makes sense.
They'd be done with the movie in February. I wouldn't. Well, maybe a pre-cut of the movie.
Yeah, it's been a pre-cut, but pretty much it was done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie without special effects, but I assume most of like Harry Potter screening now, and that's not out for another 4 months.
Yeah, but every time my Twitter feed, every other night, I had somebody go and see a free screening of Scott Pilgrim. I'm like, well, everybody who wanted to see the movie got to see it for free.
Yeah, I mean, usually would have. I mean, they do free screenings a lot, you know, just for general impressions and stuff. But yeah, there were like at least four of them within the first week before it opened in this city alone, and I got tickets for like three of them. I didn't go to all of them, but
yeah, so that kind of hurt their market easily. Yeah,
but even with all those free screenings, I mean, it couldn't have been that many people, because I mean, it opened to what I think a 10 million for the weekend.
Yeah, 10 million for the first weekend.
Yeah, that's horrible.
There are indie films that usually open better than that.
Yeah, I think that that Rob Reiner film that came out just a few weeks ago about made that, and it only opened one city.
So yeah, that's kind of, and it wasn't a cheap film to move. Like I said, it's very heavy on the special effects. Speaking of special effects, I mean, what did you think of the I guess Evil X encounters?
I haven't seen the movie, so you all have to talk about it. But I can tell you from the previews, it looked like a live action video game, and that alone kind of made me interested in it.
I actually think that scares off some people too, is that people, you know, hear and see it and it's like, oh, it's a video game movie. But I think a better description is it's a movie for video game fans. Like, there's a lot of, like, the movie opens with the Zelda theme. And there are sonic sound effects, you know, there's a part of the story where he gets a 1-up, he has a P meter, you know, when he defeats enemies, there's a giant KO graphic. So it's a lot of stuff that are, you know, like nods to video gamers and they'll appreciate it. But I think it's one of those things where it's a movie I think normal people can appreciate if they actually saw it, but video gamers get an extra level of appreciation for it when they see stuff like that.
I absolutely agree. Like when they had the Universal logo and the whole 8-bit thing, I immediately was just in love with it. I just thought that was amazing. But in terms of the special effects, I thought they were very good. I loved all the comic book effects, like, you know, all the little, you know, pows and all that kind of stuff. And
I really on my peas there.
Okay, I like the casting. There was Chris Evans, there was Brandon Routh, there was Jason Schwartzman, there was the twins, I think, aren't in any other movie. I could be mistaken on that. I've never seen them in anything.
I mean, the last movie I saw in theaters was Toy Story 3.
Which is a good movie.
Well worth it.
Have either of you read the graphic novels?
I've read all six, yeah.
How do you think it compares to the graphic novels?
I think there definitely are some differences, especially in the second half of the movie. Pretty much, you know, X's 1 through 3, it's pretty much almost exactly, maybe a few differences, maybe a few additional things, but otherwise it's pretty much the same. The movie's definitely different from the comic book in terms of storyline, the whole thing of them getting a record deal from Gideon and him taking Ramona and Ramona not being interested in Scott. That's all the movie. The book is just like this whole elaborate thing. It's definitely a bigger story within the comic books.
I prefer the movie in some aspects, but I feel that because of the time constraint, and I really wish they had made it like two movies, that a lot of the side characters and plots and stuff got pushed aside. Like, I think, what is it, MV Adams is really in the movie for like one major scene, and then she disappears. While she has a presence throughout the rest of the books, there's very little mention of the fact that Kim and Scott went out. I think they drop like one line off of it. And then at the end, he apologizes to her, but they never really make a big deal out of the fact that they used to date and how it ended badly. Or the fact that most of Scott's relationships ended badly. Like, they touch on the fact that he dated MV Adams, but they don't really go into why she broke up with him and what it did to him. He broke up with Knives, he broke up with Kim, and I think there was one other girlfriend he had who ended up moving to Montreal. And I don't think she's mentioned at all in the movie.
Well, the high school girlfriend?
No, Knives is the high school girlfriend.
Yeah, her, they cut
Knives
that.
Chow.
Yeah, they cut out the whole high school book, apparently. I'm surprised they actually did it in one movie. That's what got me. I'm like, there were seven evil exes. I mean, most movies can barely pull off having two villains, let alone seven.
I was expecting it
to be like at least a two-parter.
I was expecting a two-parter, too, especially since the movie was being developed hand-in-hand with the graphic novels, because I think when the movie started production, early graphic novels 1 through 4 were out, which is part of the reasons why it's, I assume it's different in the second half. It's because, you know, like 6 early came out last month. Yeah. So they didn't have that material to work into the movie.
Yeah, much like how Trigun was different from the manga and anime was different. Trigun, like, they reached a halfway point in the manga, and they're like, oh, we have no more manga, so let's make up our own stuff in the anime.
Yeah, I think they've done that. I think the original Fullmetal Alchemist did that as well, which is why they ended up doing Brotherhood, because it was...
Yeah, Brotherhood was pretty cool. But back on Scott Pilgrim, I think then the movie is actually being screened before the book even came out, the 6th book.
Yeah.
That had to be major spoilers for the fans.
I mean, I would assume so, but I mean, most of the element, the only thing that really would have been spoiled for the fans is who he ended up with, because, I mean, the books and the movies made it think that he can either end up with Ramona or end up with Knives, and in the book he ends up with Ramona, and he ends up with Ramona in the movie. I heard that originally they screened it with an ending where he ended up with Knives, and personally speaking, after watching the movie, I thought it built up more towards him ending up with Knives than it did to him ending up with Ramona.
I bet
The end of the movie, I thought, was less predictable than the book. With the book, you know, oh, he's going to get Ramona. You know, he fights off Gideon, he wins. With the movie, it almost seems like he's going to end up with Ramona in the end. And then she's like, no, you know, you have something to fight. You fought for her, go for her. And I was kind of surprised by that. I would have been angry if she ended up with Knives. The nerd deserves the hottest chick possible.
I don't think he was a nerd.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. He deserves a nice girl.
But Knives is a nice girl too, which is the thing. It's like, I felt that it was building up to the fact that, I mean, after Ramona and the fact that they're incompatible, I guess, is that they're really bad at relationships, which I guess was why they work well together, because he has his share of exes. They just don't turn evil and psychotic. And she has her share of evil exes, but Scott has to fight them. I mean,
well, they had a potential sequel right there. Scott's evil exes, that would.
Yeah, except I think Scott made the thing, and that's what drives the movie, is the fact that Scott makes peace with all his exes, and I think that was a bigger element in the books, because, like I said, as far as Kim goes, there's a line given during the climax where he apologizes to her. I don't remember if he apologizes or if pieces made between him and Envy Adams, and you know, him and Knives has that scene at the end where they kind of make peace, but I don't think there's room for a sequel. It would be nice.
Yeah, but it ain't gonna happen. You might get a sequel in the comics, but you never get one in this movie.
Well, yeah, you won't get a sequel in the movie if it continues bombing this bad.
Oh, it'll probably bomb unless it has really good DVD sales.
Yeah, but one thing I realized about the movie, I didn't really feel any sort of investment in the characters. Like, I really didn't give a crap of what would happen to Scott Pilgrim afterwards. I kind of felt like there was too much closure. There's too much of a conclusion.
I was going to say I don't feel anything for the characters for the most part, because none of them have any type of, I don't want to say death, but most of them, it's kind of like you see them, like with the evil exes, it's like, okay, you set it up, evil ex, they talk a bit, Scott fights them, fight over, you move on, next evil ex, next evil ex, next evil ex. Because, I mean, there are 6 major fight scenes in the movie. It's an hour and 50-minute long movie. You have to deal with the fact that he gets with Knives, he breaks up with Knives, he gets with Ramona. So there's not much room for other characters to exist. I mean, I think Wallace, who was his roommate, he had a great presence when he was on the screen, but I think it was mostly because of the sight gags, of the fact that they paid him up as a really, really, I don't want to say gay, but
homosexual,
you know, like,
that's the correct word.
Homosexual. Like, there's that one, you know, like the one scene where, because him and Scott shares beds, which has always been weird, but like there's the one scene where they wake up and like Scott's talking to him and he gets up, and then I think Scott's sister's ex-boyfriend gets up next to him, and then Wallace's original boyfriend gets up, so you know, there's like 4 guys sleeping in the same bed. And the gag works because you know what Wallace and the other 2 guys are doing, but then you realize that Scott's sleeping in the same bed with them.
Sounds like there was little character depth and no room for it, because the movie decided to go with putting all seven X's in one film.
Yeah. And, I mean, like I said, it would have been fine if they divided it one and three, because I think there was enough plot and details. The other thing is, I guess, is, like, would it have been as good as two movies? Even though it moves at breakneck speed, I don't think people would have been... Okay, again, this is assuming people are watching it, but, you know, like, if it had slowed down and had, like, three major fights and they built it up, I don't think it's the type of movie that would have benefited from that. I really don't know what would have been the perfect compromise for that movie, because I think it's too short and too crammed as it is, but I think spreading it out over two movies wouldn't have helped it as much.
Good thing they did spread it out over two movies, or we would never get a second half.
Yeah, that's true. Unless they filmed it back-to-back, like the Pirates movie or the Matrix sequels.
Even then, they'll question just like, hey, can we just put this on DVD? Because it's going to cost them so much to distribute it through theaters.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm also surprised they didn't try to tag a 3D banner on it.
It would have been too late in the production for that. They probably...
It's
2D.
It's never stopped them before.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's never too late. You got Clash of the Titans and Avatar.
Piranhas 3D.
Well, not Avatar.
The Last
Airbender.
Yeah, different Avatar.
Yeah.
One had really good 3D, one had penis hair.
I don't know which is which.
I just noticed that both applies. No, there's a scene apparently in The Last Airbender where the girl ends up becoming the moon. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. Her hair looks like a penis from behind.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about an Avatar honey kind of.
I just noticed that too. No.
Wait, The Last Airbender has good 3D? But,
Oh, funny realizations. No, Piranhas 3D just came out this weekend, which I think it performed decently.
It performed better than Scott Pilgrim.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Which doesn't say much.
No, it isn't. But it's performed decently, and it was post-production 3D. They went back and redid some scenes. Most movies in 3D, outside of, like, Avatar, you know, James Cameron's,
yeah,
and I think Toy Story. I only think Toy Story was.
All I see in movies are pretty much shot in native 3D because they do it all on the computer and they just render the image in 3D. So every animated movie is not converted in post-production. They go into the file and they do the 3D. It's as good as if it was shot in 3D. Like,
well, let's say you don't shoot animation, which is why it works so easy for animation.
Okay, I was wondering about that because most of those still been post-production.
Yeah, most of them. It's not that big of a deal, you know, because it's already animated.
Yeah.
It's not like if you're going through a movie and it's like, you know, a scene isn't made for 3D and you just kind of stretch the image out. Because, I mean, like, I haven't seen Avatar in 3D. The last movie I saw in 3D is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Seriously, man? If you want to see Avatar, you're going to have to go see it in 3D. It's the only way to see it.
I saw Avatar in theaters and I don't want to see Avatar again, so.
It's coming out again.
Yep.
Yeah, so they can add the sex scene. And
I don't know. I mean, they already made a longer movie.
I don't think they are adding that. I think
they are adding it.
They really are? I thought it was just in the script. I didn't think they actually...
No, he filmed it. I think you can see it on YouTube. It's not that... It's like a 40-second thing, and it's not really a sex scene. It's, you know, because that's what... You know, they have the hairs that do that thing, and...
It involves penis hair.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because they also use it to communicate with their animals.
So they're raping their animals.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Have you ever seen Happy Harry's Avatar, the little cartoon? Avatar 6. Here's a chance to look up the guy who did the Saturday Morning Watchman.
Oh, that was a good... I like the Saturday Morning Watchman.
He did a little video called Avatar 6. And that showing what the scene might have been like. Well, just say, you gotta watch it. It's pretty funny. It's got some pretty funny moments. There's like... And Avatar's anatomy is so different from humans, and the guy doesn't get it until he's like, we have to use the hair?
So it's, I guess to wrap this up, has anybody played the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World video game?
I have.
Oh, I want to. I've seen footage of it. It looks really good.
Okay, before I ask you your thoughts on it, I do not get why people are calling it a homage to the 8-bit era. It's a 16-bit game. It looks like a 16-bit game.
It's not... It's more like a, not even 16-bit, but it's a homage to like River City Rampage or whatever.
Rampage. I mean, when I think 8-bit homage, I think something like Mega Man 9 and 10. Scott Pilgrim's a 16-bit game.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a Super Nintendo game more than it does a Nintendo game, basically.
Yeah, it looks more like you see something off of Sega or a really nice arcade machine.
Yeah, it does. So, Adam, what did you think?
The game definitely leans towards being more like the comic books in terms of there's more references, like the fight with Lucas Lee, it's during the day, like it is in the comic books, rather than at night, like it is during the movie. But the game, it's really, really good, but the problem with it, it's really, really difficult.
Oh, like a true 8-bit game.
Yeah.
A true 8-bit game, 16-bit game, it is difficult. I can't even, you know, I'm up to the third level of 7, I can't even get past it. It's so ridiculous. And I don't have anyone to play co-op with, so it's a bit...
Yeah. It really sucked that they also didn't include online co-op, or I would have... Because I actually did buy it, but I played the demo, I didn't care much for it. I think my biggest issue is that, one, if you're not running, he controls like he's in mud. And he moves really slow and stiff. And the other thing is the hit detection, is that you have to be pretty much in front of the enemy. Like, if you're too far in front, you're going to end up whiffing and just, like, hit in the air, even though you're, like, connecting with the punch. And if you're too far out, it doesn't work.
Yeah, so. I thought that at first that he moved like mud, but it's really a matter of just getting used to the controls, because about... Like, it's like you have to hit the analog stick 2 times to the right in order to start running. And that'll get you out of the kind of muddy movements.
Well, like I said, when he's running, it's fine. But sometimes you just – because, you know, like if you're running, you don't have as much control over him because you have to stop running to change directions or to walk up and down the screen.
That's true. Also, the game's kind of glitchy. Like, I had this problem where I was playing the second level with Lucas Lee. I was working so hard on it, and I beat him. And then the game glitches where it doesn't access the kind of KO, you know, get me the rewards, get me to the next level. The game just kind of freezes with him on the ground where, you know, I'm kind of just moving in this land of nothing.
8-bit gaming class at its best right there, guys.
So it's like they wanted to be a true homage.
You have to take the cartridge out and blow in it.
Yeah, that annoyed me. I had to play that whole level over again, and then I finally beat him with only like 13 health left and no lives.
Oh,
nice.
I was playing Sonic 2. I made it all the way through like the chemical plant level. I ended up walking off the edge after I beat the boss.
Nice.
I just got frustrated with it, and I turned off the game.
I always hated that boss. All right, I don't mind it, but I hate any boss where not only do you have to contend with the boss, but you have to contend with the fact that you can potentially die after.
Yeah, that's like the biggest bullshit. Sorry, like,
I think you should just like automatically say the stage is over. It's the same thing I have issues with sometimes in Super Mario Galaxy, in that like you earn a star and then the star is like on the other end of the stage, so you have to go back and get it, and if you fall, you kind of screwed the pooch.
Yeah, I had those instances a lot. Super Mario Sunshine has had a lot. Any Mario game that doesn't have the
goalpost.
Yeah.
It pisses me off. Okay, so to conclude our discussion on the Scott Pilgrim franchise, comic, movie, video game, final thoughts.
I think the movie was aimed at a very niche market. It gave away too many free screenings. And it was just had a bad competition. It had to compete against Expendables, probably one of the most anticipated movies of like the past couple of years. And as for the comic series, it is probably, I wouldn't say overrated. I do not like that it's actually in the manga section at my local bookstore.
It's not in the manga section in mine. But I actually don't go searching for it that often.
Well, I mean, I just happened to look for it. I was like, man, I want to read Scott Pilgrim. And I ended up not getting it. But I found it in the manga section, yet the Twilight graphic novel, which is pretty much manga, because it is done by a true manga artist, is in the American section next to Watchmen and, I think, Kingdom Come.
Wait, there's a Twilight graphic novel?
You haven't heard of this?
No.
I try to avoid that series as much as possible, so no.
I'll just say this. The artwork's actually really good because it's done by, I don't know the name of the manga artist, but he's really good. It had bad lettering, and of course, it's still Twilight. Excuse me.
Interesting.
About that. Yeah. But as for the video game, the inclusion, for once, not including an online co-op, that's kind of weird. Most of the time you don't get local co-op anymore. You always get online. So
yeah.
And it's weird. It's an arcade game, online arcade game.
Yeah, and it's four players, so it would have worked out well for PSN and Xbox Live Arcade to have. I
don't have four controllers.
I don't know many people who have four controllers.
I only have two. I have one.
Yeah, for the 360 and the PS3, most people, I don't know many people who own four controllers just because there aren't many local co-op games, and for the most part, everybody has their own system.
Yeah, and it's bloody expensive for those controllers.
Oh, it's like $50 a pop.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? Screw that. I've been meaning to buy an extra controller for the past, 3 years? Never have. I've always get a new controller or get this stack of comics.
Or a new game for that price.
I know. I can get a new controller or I can actually play the games.
Yeah, it's a novel concept.
Yeah. That's all my thoughts on it. What's your thoughts?
Adam.
All right, my thoughts on I thought the movie was very good. I really, really liked it. Very funny. They did a great job with it. I wish more people could see it. A lot of people aren't giving it a chance. It is for a very niche market. The way they advertised it, just the look of the movie, people are just like, forget it. I've never met anyone aside from people who are familiar with video games or the Scott Pilgrim franchise that say, I want to see this movie or I've seen it and it looks amazing and it was amazing. The comics, I really like the comics. I don't read much comic books or manga or anything like that. Scott Pilgrim is really the only graphic novel I ever really read aside from Watchmen. And I really like Scott Pilgrim. I love the character development in the graphic novels. I wish they did more of that in the movie. That was the highlight for the comic book. And that's why I give the edge to that. The video game, definitely, I like that it lends itself more towards the comics than the movies than the movie, but the game is really, really hard, and the fact that they don't have online co-op really gets me angry, but I still like the game. If you're into those 16-bit games and are up for a challenge, definitely purchase it. Oh, and by the way, a fun fact that you're talking about Dragon Ball Z earlier, about the differences between the manga and the anime. My brother's actually reading the manga for Dragon Ball Z, and he told me, and he showed me it too, that Vegeta's power level is over 8,000 in the manga and over 9,000 on the anime, hence the whole internet joke.
Yeah. It's over 9,000.
Yeah. If you want to get into that discussion about the animes, they end up making Dragon Ball Z Kai, which is just Dragon Ball Z abridged, which is, it just made it a lot shorter.
Yeah. Which is still kind of long.
100 episodes, man. 100 episodes out of 275.
Yeah, which is fine, but I was looking at some of the synopsises. I don't even think that's the proper word. For the episode guide, because I wanted to check it out because I heard it was shorter. And then Frieza Fight is still like 10 episodes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot happens in a Frieza Fight anyway.
But it's still such a long fight.
I mean, it's still a saga. In the original anime, it's like 30 episodes.
Yeah, just that fight. I understand a saga. But, you know, like there's a bunch of stuff that happens on that planet. They didn't need to extend the fight that long.
Well, see, Piccolo comes in. He bonds with Nails. He fights Frieza. He does good, then Frieza Morse kicks everyone's butt. He kills Krillin. Krillin comes back. He kills Krillin again. He kills Vegeta. He makes Goku go Super Saiyan, and that's about 10 minutes. That's like 5 episodes there. And about 5 episodes for every minute, apparently, that happened on the planet. I still remember the Frieza saga, despite only having seen it about 10 years ago.
Okay. And that should do it for our discussion on Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim
versus the Nerds on the Rocks, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back, and we're going to do the question of the week, but before we get to that, we have a new guest joining us, Adam Chase, but for the sake of not confusing myself and the two Adams, we should be just referring to him as Chase. Say hello.
Hi.
Okay, our question of the week this week is, what is your favorite continuous video game storyline?
I guess I'll start off. Okay. Madden counts, right?
I'm sure Madden has this deep, deep story.
Oh, yeah. Come on. You know, you got to fight the evil John Madden every issue, every year. No,
every issue. It's a comic book.
Sorry, I got comics on the mind, dude. I'm drawing comics while I'm doing this. Multitasking like a fiend. But, no, honestly, comics on the mind. Best video game. There we go. Storyline I enjoy. See, I've had a lot of enjoyment out of Mass Effect. Mass Effect's probably the biggest one recently. Because the storyline is actually really good, well written, very tight for a modern storytelling. It's really hard to talk about like old games. Old games because they really don't have much story back in the classic days. Like Zelda. Zelda has a good storyline, but it's really hard to map. And Metroid's weird.
I mean, I think Nintendo has that whole element with their games, like that. Like Zelda is hard to map, but there is sort of a continuous storyline in the franchise. Like, we know that Ocarina of Time has to take place before any current Zelda.
Yeah, because that's the first adventure.
We know that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess serves as sequels to Ocarina of Time. It's just how they, because technically they have to take place at the same time for either story to make sense, which would explain it has to be two universes or whatever, or a split timeline. We know that A Link to the Past, as far as I know, is the most, I guess, recent Zelda game as far as story is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Your question is, where does the CDI Zelda games fit in?
Yeah, we did not talk about the CDI Zelda games.
Oh, come on. We got to talk about
the They builds. Do not exist. There's no such thing as CDI Zelda games.
Oh, come on. CDI Zelda? Excuse me, princess?
That's the cartoon Zelda, which I have no problem talking about. But, Metroid's the same way. I mean, the difference with Metroid and Zelda is Metroid has a continuous storyline. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really messed up because I think it's Metroid 1, it's Metroid Prime 1 through 3, it's Metroid 2, it's Super Metroid, and then it's going to be Metroid Other M, and then Metroid Fusion.
Metroid Zero Mission is basically the Zero issue of the stuff.
Isn't Metroid Zero Mission just a remake of Metroid?
It's a remake of Metroid with elements of Metroid Fusion thrown in.
That's exactly it.
It's really well done. It's Metroid with maps.
So,
if you ever played the original Metroid, you'll get the butt kicked.
So, Adam, what is your pick?
Believe it or not, I really don't know. I've never been in love with a single game storyline. I feel like a lot of them are kind of B-rated movies with cheap one-liners. I would say keep the story simple and short. I love the story. I hate the story for Halos 1 through 3, but I love the one for ODST because they kept it simple. It was only a few characters. You know, it was only they were discovering the mystery of this place that had been this, you know, invaded by the Covenant. I got to say one suggestion I have about game storylines is that they should have the first bit of gameplay before the first cutscene because I'm always wondering. I'm like, okay, I want to get to the game. I want to know what it's like, and they have this cutscene before it, or they're explaining the intro to the game, and I'm just not paying attention. I feel like they should have a tutorial or some kind of introduction of gameplay before they introduce anything story-related.
The one I hate is the ones where you have a movie that's before the game, but you have to watch it the first time anyhow.
Oh, like Metroid Zero Mission's worse for that.
Like the intro movie where it's not part of the game yet. It's like before they start, like before you press start or whatever you press on controllers nowadays. And I can't think of an example. I think, Beating Kaitos for the GameCube, I think it's like that. Where there's like this animated cutscene before the game starts. How come you like the story in ODST and not like, what was wrong with Halo 1 through 3 storyline?
I felt like it was too confusing. I felt like they tried to introduce too many things. I guess I was kind of younger when I played it, so I didn't really understand what exactly was going on. I kind of knew they were fighting this war. They were doing a bunch of things. I didn't know what was going on. I have to say, though, in terms of game stories I loved, Heavy Rain, I think, is just the best game story I've ever played. It's the most attached I've ever been to any game characters or anything like that, so thumbs up to them. I'm playing through the original Metal Gear Solid, and I have to say I absolutely love the story in that game. I feel like they really are nailing it. It doesn't feel like cheap one-liners. It really does feel like a good story. I still have to finish it and play the other three games, which I have sitting on my drawer collecting dust. But, you know, I have to say I love the story for that game.
I was going
to
say I'm surprised nobody mentioned Metal Gear Solid because, I mean, it's not just Metal Gear Solid. There's also Metal Gear 1 and 2 for the Nintendo or the MSX, which also tie into the storylines of the Metal Gear Solid franchise. And I don't know. I think Acid and Portable Ops and Peace Walker all fit into that storyline as well. So it's a very detailed game world. Which
Metal Gear.
Metal Gear Solid. Wow.
Which is weird because I've had a Sony system up till like, this generation.
I never
touched it. Which is weird because all my friends played it to death. That's all they talked about.
What does Mr. Chase have to say?
About Metal Gear Solid or just...
Well, about your favorite.
Oh, my favorite. Okay. Well, I was going to say like one of the Final Fantasies, but it's not really like a reoccurring game, I guess.
It's very episodic.
That's a good way to put it. Though episodes would assume that they tie in together.
But I guess some other ones would be I really love BioShock storyline because you know it's just so original to me, and it's not just that, but like even though it's not really about the storyline, but the game itself is just. It puts you in the world, and then it makes you believe everything. So it's just, you know, I just fell in love with that game right
off.
Have
you played BioShock 2?
Yeah.
Does the storyline tie in with the first one? I haven't played.
Well, the second one, not really that much. And I actually kind of think that's a good thing, really, because I think the first one was kind of just by itself, and there wasn't really much they could do after that, I think, with Rapture. And that was kind of shown in the second one. I mean, I love the second one, but the first one is just so much better because, like, in the second one, it's just you got some new bad woman trying to take over everything, and it's not really as, you know, you can't remember it as well.
Okay, you know, I've been on record saying this. I'm not too keen on stories and video games. I think because, like Adam mentioned, it pretty much all boils down to... At best, they're a B-rated movie. They would be. Like, Mass Effect people love, but...
Yeah, it's a B-rated really like movie.
It's like a poor man's Star Wars.
Oh, it ain't no poor man's Star Wars. It's more like a poor man's Stargate. It's more of a poor man's Stargate. Get that right.
It's a poor man's something.
It's a poor man's Stargate meets Star Trek.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoy Mass Effect.
I know.
But has anybody here played Mass Effect 2?
I played the demo.
Okay, to me, and again, this is just me, Mass Effect 2 is basically, you start the game, there's an event, you recruit a team, you go to an event, it's the end of the game.
That's how Mass Effect 1 was.
Yeah, it's pretty, like, for such a story-heavy game, I feel like the story is very disconnected. Like, there's a whole bunch of little stories with the characters, but for the grand scheme of things, they really don't matter that much.
Oh, yeah. Only character I think mattered in the first game was the Krogan.
So it's kind of like, you know, like you get nice character moments, but it was never built to me as a character ensemble. It was always like a space epic, and I just don't get that feeling. I've never got that feeling when I played Mass Effect 2. So, I mean, maybe they can fix it in Part 3, where it's a bit more, like, you know, like you have this huge war going on or whatever, and it's kind of like you're at the backdrop of it.
Yeah.
It needs to be in the foreground.
Yeah, to explain why it's like that. If you ever read any of the guy who wrote the game, it's called his name is Drew. I'm not going to bother trying to pronounce it. It's like Capshian. It's really crazy looking last name. The guy writes books. He writes basically. He wrote Mass Effect books. He wrote the first Mass Effect game and the second one. And he wrote a couple Star Wars books, the Darth Bane series. And if you ever read the Darth Bane series. You can see why he has horrible pacing elements in Mass Effect. Like, Mass Effect, the first part of the game is, like, really nice, excellent paced. Then you get to, like, the last planet, and everything just goes crazy. That's how it was in his Darth Bane book. We're having this nice world building, character building, awesome. Then, whenever the big event happens, he rushes through it so fast. And you don't get a feel for it.
I think pacing in video games is actually another issue I have with storyline. In like with a movie, you time it. It's a 2-hour movie. You get everything in 2 hours. A book, you pace it so certain. Like with a video game, there's no way to say, like, this person gets to this point at the game, like an hour in, and this person gets to this point in the game, like 5 hours in. And I think that's why it's hard to make a story. Like an RPG, for example. There are some people who will, like they'll go from town to town, they'll do side quests and whatever, and then they'll continue. Then there's other people who spend 2-3 hours in the field grinding. And by then, it kind of slows the pace down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's very hard to pace a video game properly just because there's no way to control, like, when a person gets to an event.
Without being too linear.
Even if you're linear, it's like, you can't say, okay, Uncharted, for example, is a game I love.
That's a story I love of a game, Uncharted. I feel like some of it's a bit cliche, but I do like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
that's what I thought,
especially with the last half, the end of the first one and the second one too. It's literally, they just took it from Indiana Jones, I thought.
The thing with those games, though, is like they have to make it video gamey, because it's like a really fun adventure game, and then you get like these random elements. In the first one, it was like the zombie dogs.
Yeah.
And then the second one was the were people. Yeah, Uncharted is another game. It's like, it's a finely paced game. It's pretty linear, because, I mean, you have really no control. But the fact is, like, there's some people who might go off exploring more often to find artifacts and stuff than there are people who just kind of rush through the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it might be so for somebody who spends, like, half an hour going through every nook and cranny to find the artifacts and the treasures than it is for somebody who's just kind of, like, running through, just gunning things down.
Yeah, I just thought of another game series I actually enjoyed the storyline for. That is the PlayStation 2 era Ratchet & Clank's. I've yet to play the PS3 ones because I'm cheap and I haven't bought a PS3 and I don't see the need to. But Ratchet & Clank almost makes me want to buy it because I really love those games. That game series probably had one of my favorite ongoing storylines.
And that's actually kind of... because it's one of the few video game storylines that actually wrapped up with a crack in time. And it was kind of nice. I don't know if you saw the trailer for All for One. And it was kind of nice that they paid a nod to that, where, like, it's interviewing Ratchet and Clank, and they're like, yeah, what have you been doing since you saved the galaxy and everything's at peace now? And they're just like, we're just hanging out or whatever. And it's kind of nice that they kind of paid homage to the fact that, like, yeah, the game world has been at peace. We kind of wrapped it up in a crack in time. We have to own.
Oh,
They did that in the first Ratchet and Clank game, too. After he finally, after he beat the big bad in Ratchet and Clank 1, Ratchet & Clank 2 starts up, they're sitting around the shop. They're just like, yeah, we're just bored. Hopefully somebody will have something to do. And they end up getting taken by Mr. Fizzywig or whatever. Fezzijig or something like that.
How was the story in Ratchet and A Crack in Time? I played Tools of Destruction and Quest for Booty. I didn't actually play A Crack in Time yet.
I haven't played A Crack in Time. I was going to buy it this week, but does anybody know if I think it has some elements, but does Pokemon have a continuous storyline, or does it just...
Not exactly.
The
first two games do. The rest of it doesn't.
Okay.
Because
I kind of skipped generations after Gold and Silver, and I came back during Diamond and Platinum. So I don't really know, if they were, because I know, Red from the first game is, a Pokemon master or whatever in the second one.
Yeah, he's basically Ash who kicks your butt if you're not ready.
But nobody else.
Yeah, Gold and Silver, it's a direct continuation. Ruby and Sapphire, it sort of mentions stuff that happened in the other games. Like, oh, my buddy Bill across the ocean. Across the way, he helps me with this. Professor Oak, I'm going to talk to him, or Professor Elm. I think Platinum version actually goes out of its way and includes, Bill and all them. Actually has Professor Oak in the game. But for the most part, Ruby, Sapphire, and Platinum Pearl are individual games.
Oh, and for some reason, when you mentioned Bill, and that reminded me that another game series that I like is Left 4 Dead. And Valve is doing a really good job with that, even, because, the first and second game kind of are separate in that they have different heroes and whatever, but since the release of Left 4 Dead 2, they released The Passing, which was a DLC that tied in the first game and the second game, And now they're going to release a second set of DLC called The Sacrifice, which ties in even more with the first and second game, which is a nice nod. It's like, you know, they're building a universe out of these two separate... I mean, it's the same world, but they were disconnected. Like, I think the second game's more southern, and the first game's like northern folks.
Yeah. See, would Fallout count as an ongoing storyline? Fallout 1 and 2, at least.
As I was to say, does 3 tie in with the other ones?
No, from what I hear, 3's totally pretty much its own game.
And I hear New Vegas doesn't really tie in.
New Vegas is like set in the same universe, but not the same character.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, we'll have to wait until it comes out to find out, but...
Yeah, it's pretty much what they're saying, though. Okay.
I thought of another game storyline I actually like. Assassin's Creed, that's really good. And I love how they have all the side quests, but they can still go on to the main one. It's pretty easy to follow. There's too many characters, in my opinion, but I like the whole thing where it takes place in the future and then in the past. I really like when they do that jump.
Oh, I just thought of one. Bring up future and past. And also in line with Ratchet and Clank, the Jack series. That game series has pretty much a beginning, and middle, and end. Had its definite storyline. Okay. Because, you know, in the beginning, it starts out simple. It's just an open-world platformer. Then you get this cliffhanger ending. They go into the portal, and they're like, where's it taking us? And all of a sudden, they come in, and they end up waking up in this really dark dystopian future. And Jack's corrupted, and they're trying to, you know, free the people. And the game ends. I honestly have yet to be Jack, too, because the game is that difficult at times. Then it ends... And Jack is, you know, savior, but he still gets kicked out of the city by the new government. So in Jack 3, he goes in to retake this, you know, free the city from everyone and save it. So it's actually an ongoing storyline, pretty tightly, you know, made. I also have some, like, minor problems, like the storyline. Like, there's a difference between Jack 2, how the ending and begin starts. But pretty much it's the same game, like, same storyline all the way through.
You mentioned that. Would folks prefer more closure to video game storylines? Like, if Nintendo came up with the Zelda game, which was like the Zelda game that caps the Zelda storyline, like, there's no game that can go beyond this point anymore.
Like, they literally kill Zelda and he doesn't get up there.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if they kill it. I don't know how you would end Zelda. I mean, like, would you, like, burn the Triforce or something, or... Because, I mean, I assume they've broken the Triforce up into pieces before. They've hit it. So I assume they'd have to completely destroy it so that nobody can ever collect it again. But there's no way for, I guess, evil not to survive.
Yeah, there's always evil. That's what the Zelda games are about, really.
Because, I mean, they drowned Hyrule, and that still didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's actually true. They sort of had their own water world. That's what the Wind Waker series, basically. It's some water world.
Does anyone know when Skyward Sword is going to take place? Like, in the storyline?
Before Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it seems to be the origins of the Master Sword, so I'd have to assume it's the first game in the series.
Yeah, it's what it's looking like. Here's the thing. With Zelda, here's how you should view it. View its story like a true legend, and that it's totally separate. Don't try to interconnect them, because you're going to get really confused really quick. View them Some of them interconnect, like, you know how mythology works. Like, oh, there's a story of Hercules. Well, Hercules did this, this, and this while he was doing this, so he took some time off and went with the Argonauts. But he came back, and he went and continued his storyline. You know? So there's little side stories you can have, but for the most part, view them as each individual legends told by different people, and that explains some of these inaccuracies.
I was going to say, I think part of the reason is that Nintendo always hints at it, but it's always difficult for fans, because, like, they literally tell you that that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess take place after Ocarina of Time. They tell you, I think, exactly, I know Wind Waker tells you at the beginning that it's 100 years after Ocarina of Time,
yeah,
and that they waited for the hero of time to come, and that's why I think every 12th birthday, a boy gets the green tunic.
I think it's actually, they pretty much imply in Wind Waker, that series, that, yeah, it's all a legend.
Yeah,
and it's really not Link that he's coming through time. He rises up to be Link.
But what I mean is, like, they take the events of Ocarina of Time and turn it into this legend.
Yeah,
and
so,
it's like, I mean, each Link is a different, not each Link, but for the most part, there's different eras of Links. But it's like Nintendo hints at this continuity with the series, and I think fans like to try to put it together just because, like, Nintendo is always, like, you know, throwing that carrot in front of their face, because they were the ones who mentioned Skyward Sword being, like, you know, taking place in the Zelda timeline, yeah. And they talked about having a definitive timeline for the series. They just won't show it to anybody.
You know what it is? It's Miyamoto just counting his money. That's his only definitive timeline. It's like,
probably just have circles drawn in the page, and, like, yeah, they'll figure it out at some point.
He just looks at a marker board and, like, oh my. I'm telling you, I really recommend
something like Mario. Does anybody think there's a
There's a true straightforward story for Mario.
Well, I mean, other than Yoshi's Island, I would assume, which has to be the first game.
Yeah, but if you're gonna count for Zelda people who really like to know where Zelda, look up the Angry Video Games Nerds Crisis of Continuity. I think it's what it's called. Zelda series.
Oh yeah, and also Super Mario Galaxy 1 and Super Mario Galaxy 2 take place at parallel universes.
That just makes it so much fun, doesn't it?
I played both Super Mario Galaxies.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, they start off the same with the Star Festival or whatever, and people saying that was kind of weird that it happens twice, since it's an event that happens, like, I think once every 100 years or so. And you find out at the end of Super Mario Galaxy 2 that at the end of Super Mario Galaxy 1, they erase time or whatever, erase their events. And you find out at the end of 2, like, that takes place separately, because you meet Rosaline, who's the stewardess of the ship in the first game, or whatever you want to call her, the Star Princess.
I think just with Nintendo games in general, outside of, like, I guess you can count Metroid, just view them as individual legends, like Arthurian legends. There's a definitive beginning and there's a definitive end. The rest, you can figure it out for yourself.
I think the thing with their series is that they just have way too many games.
Oh, like, yeah, but Zelda made it out to be Nintendo made them out to be legacies.
Yeah, which are fun. It's like comic book interpretations. Like, every artist has their own stamp on it, and I'm sure somebody's going to jump on. I mean, it's basically telling the same story in different manners, but they're always good, so I can't complain.
Well, there's only 7 different ways to tell a plot.
Yeah.
7
different stories.
Yes, there's only 7 different stories out there is how you go about doing it. So you're going to have redundancy.
Okay, so I think we can put a stamp on our conversation. So final thoughts, everybody's favorite video game storyline, Jordan.
Ratchet and Clank. That's one I remember when I was growing up. Yeah, that's how young I am, guys. I'm only 20.
Chase.
Yeah.
Probably Bioshock or Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, we didn't even mention Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah,
I never played it.
It'll go pretty deep for the Kingdom Hearts, but yeah.
Okay, how does Kingdom Hearts work? Because I know 1 and 2, but like Birth by Sleep, 356 by 2 or whatever.
Yeah, Birth by Sleep is, it takes place 10 years before the first one. And, let's see, Chain of Memories takes place in between 1 and 2. And 358 divided by 2 is kind of in the same realm as Chain of Memories a little bit. It's all over the place, kind of, but it's really interesting if you understand all of it.
Which I apparently don't.
So it's Kingdom Hearts 179.
I always thought that title was stupid, but I assume it's explained in the game.
It's 179, guys. They decided to jump so far ahead in the series.
I think, 358 days by 2 characters or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense.
It's a really odd name, but I remember them explaining it once. And Adam, yours.
Heavy Rain is my top favorite game storyline. I don't think that's going to change for a while. Otherwise, Assassin's Creed series, Uncharted series, God of War series, which we didn't mention. I hated the ending, but I thought the rest of it was executed really well.
This God of War, the first game, wrapped up so nicely. I haven't played the other ones, though, so.
I thought the second one, I loved how they ended off on the cliffhanger with the second one, and then they went into the third one. And then Halo 3 ODST, I really like the story for that. I'm pretty sure I'll like the story for Reach, too, because I feel like it'll be a very similar thing where it's not Master Chief related.
But, what is Reach about?
It's a prequel to the original Halo. It's the start of the whole war between the Covenant and the Spartans.
So everyone's a Spartan.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the War of Superman. All right, cool.
Well, apparently it's not the War of Superman because they all die. I guess they don't all. You know, it's kind of sad. I played Halo 1 through 3. I played ODST, and I have no idea what's going on in most of those games.
It's simple. Kill the alien.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I see it. It's like I go from point A to point B killing stuff, but apparently it's something that wraps it around. I know that,
it's what it is. Alien religion hates us, so we go kill it. It's a striking commentary on society, really.
I was going to say, and I hate to, you know, I know we want to wrap this up, but this is something I talked about on Twitter, is that Samus is the ultimate evil in the universe.
Oh, because, gosh.
You say, you know, people say stuff about Metroids and space pirates, but who do we see committing genocide throughout 7 games or so? Who has destroyed so many planets after killing every species on it?
Here. I tell you right now, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of the game. The stupid, Katamari Damacy. Is it Katamari Damacy?
It's
that.
He
doesn't destroy planets, he just puts a lot of, he creates them.
Still, he totally ruins crap.
But yeah, Samus goes on a planet, kills all of its species, then builds it up and runs. She doesn't even stay for the cleanup effort.
Well, yeah, that's where our cleanup effort went. Blow it up.
She is the ultimate video game terrorist. I mean, how many people have you seen Mother Brain kill?
Me, several times. Because if you watch my save file on Metroid, I die a lot. I die a lot.
You don't see Mother Brain kill anybody. You don't see the space pirates kill anybody.
Oh,
well,
space pirates the reason you half the time you land on those planets.
I think space pirates killed people in the Prime series. I could be mistaken. Hardly see the Metroids kill anything.
Yeah, they kill me 100 times.
But Samus, you see her kill things left and right. I mean, I understand she's a bounty hunter, but jeez.
I thought she was more of a comp, but, you know, bounty hunter works, too.
No, she's a bounty hunter.
Really? I always ignore that text in Zero Mission because it's like 2 minutes and it's all text. I want to shoot stuff.
Which is, I've always found Samus interesting because she's like the anti-Nintendo character. She's violent.
She's Mega Man with boobs.
Yeah, she kills stuff, and she pretty much kills for money. Well, I mean, I don't know if she ever gets paid. I assume she does, because she does a job pretty damn well.
It goes into her Swiss bank account.
She's a bounty hunter like Boba Fett is a bounty hunter, and that they're not very good at it.
She's very good at it.
She always kills her target. She never brings the body with them. She always
I always assumed that she had – I thought she – because I know with the Metroid, she was paid to exterminate them, or at least that's a mission.
I'm assuming the Metroids are, like, really bad people, though, because they really apparently screwed her over.
But they didn't screw her over. They screwed over her...
race.
Yeah. Well, not her race. The race that raised her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the bird people.
The Chozos.
Nintendo. I'm trying to think of more destructive people in video games.
I would assume that all Nintendo characters, there's Mario, who
have you seen those?
Who are just strolling on their way, minding their business.
Hey, some of them commit suicide, though. Those freaking green shells and those Goombas, they just, like, walk off.
Make them commit suicide. Don't crush them to death. How many people have you honestly seen Bowser kill?
He tries to rape the princess.
Okay, yes, he's not the best person in the world, but Mario doesn't have to go around killing everybody in his way to stop a rapist.
Italian. He's probably doing it for the mob.
I never actually thought of that. Why does Bowser want to take the princess? I guess He wants to put his...
Bowser, he wants to stick his Koopa Jr. in her, okay?
I mean, I guess the most logical explanation would be that he wants to consolidate power between her kingdom. And I guess it is, because technically he's a king.
He's more like, it's really just, okay, Koopa is just Bowser is just a dragon. It's just a knight going to kill a dragon.
Pretty much.
There's no real story behind it. Just Bowser's a dragon, Princess Peach or Toadstool or whoever else it's going to be. It's just a princess. We assume he wants to do dirty things to that princess because they're Japanese, and Japanese people are very crazy. Tentacles.
Okay. Oof. Okay, so that should do it for the question of the week.
Yeah.